You're welcome back. This is Newsfile, it's your most authoritative news analysis platform, and here on Newsfile, we put Ghana first. I'm Samson Ladi Anyenini. It has taken 466 days for Ken Oforiatta to be removed after protest for him to be removed. But he's removed from being in charge of the Ministry of Finance and Economic Planning. Some insist where he finds himself now, he may be even more powerful than the finance minister. Franklin Cudjoe, president and CEO of Imani Africa, says, according to news sources in the office of the president, Ken Oforiatta will serve as the president's special envoy on international investment and capital markets, meaning he will be in charge of negotiating most big deals. He is now bigger than the IMF. But this reshuffle, what does it bring? Does it meet your expectations? Particularly that it has not resulted in the downsizing of the government. The biggest government that we have ever seen, 126, started by Akufo-Addo and later cut to 86. Professor or Dr. John Osei Kwapong says, there are two central questions emerging from this reshuffle. Why now? And what difference will it make? Politically, if this had been done a year or two ago, it may have allowed the administration to win back some of the good graces it once enjoyed at a high level from Ghanaians. Professor Alidu Seidu says, I think the timing will not help even with the best of people with skills to make a meaningful impact, given the time that we have. The president dragged his feet all this while until now. So people may think that this particular reshuffle is introducing new talents full of useful people. But will they have the time and be able to exhibit the talents they have? I share one other view with you. And these are people in academia, in governance, in the CSO forefront leadership. Dr. Kojo Pumpuni Asante, Director of Advocacy and Policy Engagement at the CDD, says, the question to ask is, why now? Just like Dr. Osei Kwapong. And what is the added governance value of the reshuffle with about 9 months to go to the elections? It is also important that the new leadership tries to be more consultative and build consensus on the interventions that will promote consolidation, growth, and a path to transformation. These have been the comments arising from the reshuffle announced by the president. My guest this morning to help with the discussion, Sam George, his MP, Ningo Pram Pram. Haruna Muhammad is Deputy General Secretary, MPP. Dr. Theo Echampong is Political Risk Analyst. Kwame Pienin is Economist. And we will also have Kweku Kwating, the man we understand was offered an opportunity and he declined, also joining us briefly to explain why. Gentlemen, thank you very much for making time to join us.
Pleasure.
Great. So, if I may start with you, Haruna, are you with us on the line?
asking something.
Great. How have you been, as it were, examining or taking the criticism, call it feedback, from the populace? The media has been on the streets to speak to people at random, and the majority view is obvious. Too little, too late.
Samson, first and foremost, I would want to say good morning to your cherished viewers and my colleagues in the studio and other persons on the other line. I think that this is a very welcoming news from His Excellency the President, despite the fact that we have had several criticisms which are very legitimate, that this should have been done very earlier. However, there is a saying that better late than never, and it is better to be late than to be called the late. I believe the introduction by His Excellency the President to his government currently will help to transform and put more energies in this particular sector or sectors that have been identified, and they will contribute their quota. Looking at the expertise that they are going to bring on, and looking at their age, their youthful exuberance, who will contribute their quota in terms of work effectiveness and work efficiency. Certain gaps the House must have been identified by His Excellency the President, and he feels that no matter the time limit that is left for him to lead power, as a person, he still needs this energy to contribute to the development of Ghana. We share in the views of the people of Ghana, we share in the view of the media, we share in the views of the civil society, and that is why the General Secretary of our party, my boss, this indicated that when we were having our Thanksgiving service, that His Excellency the President should take some time of rethink about the people that work in his government to re-inject more energy that will help to propel the good fortunes of the party as well as government. And at this juncture, we are happy that His Excellency has listened to the call of the New Patriotic Party's General Secretary. However, Samson, we are also still calling on those who think that they are very tired and cannot contribute much to the fortunes of the party and government, can also voluntarily resign so that people that will be able to access will be appointed to those particular positions. I don't think that 9 months, 8 months, or which month cannot make a positive decision. In football, we do changes even 3 minutes to time, 5 minutes to time, and such persons come in and change the dynamism of politics. And we welcome the news by His Excellency the President of the Republic of Ghana.
Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia has promised that if he's given the opportunity to be president, he will cut the number to 50 ministers and deputy ministers in total. John Mahama is proposing 60. Some say we can do far less. We can actually do, according to Che Mensa Bonsu, a lot less. Some say we can do with 20. Is this not the time the president should have listened to the cries of Ghanaians? And if you say media simply mirrors, reflects the society. Is it not the time to do that? What's the value of the reshuffle if it does not lead to a downsizing of the government in a country in austerity?
This is a valid call. However, every leader and the way, manner, or the factor in which he wants to handle or solve a problem, His Excellency the Vice President, should he become President of the Republic of Ghana, has proposed a solution of 50 ministers. The current sitting president, considering the issues that are before him and the kind of solutions that he needs, he thinks, based on his leadership quality, needs this number of ministers to be able to run the administration. We can't obviously fault him for his own decisions, but we can question how these things are done, and that is why we are in a democracy. But if you look at the solutions that the vice president proposed, he looked at sector by sector and also indicated his contribution to this sector. And by the time that he assumed the role as the president of the Republic of Ghana, certain ministries has to be merged, certain departments has to be merged, and for him to be able to have the 15 ministries. Let's remember, His Excellency the Vice President's role now is to assist, not to insult. And when he's given the opportunity per the Constitution of the Republic of Ghana, he will have the opportunity to insult. And when he has to, he will be able to make sure that tentatively he identifies which department or ministry can contribute to the vision that he has
so
for the people of Ghana.
Effectively, the Vice President's number of 50 is one of the biggest criticisms he can make of the current regime. Despite the fact that when the president appointed 126, you defended it. He's hanging at 86, you are defending it. This criticism ought to tell you that you are not listening to the people.
I don't think it's a criticism. When you offer solutions different from somebody's solution, doesn't necessarily mean that you are criticizing the person.
You don't change what is good.
You are looking at it from a different point of view. Samson, remember, when you are at a far distance and somebody is also closer to a certain object, and you are all giving solutions to that object, it depends upon where you stand. Perhaps where you are standing will give you a different direction as to how you are going to solve it. At this particular instance, the Vice President says that considering the impact of the economy, considering the governance structure, considering the opportunity that will be given him in 2025, he needs 50 numbers of ministers to be able to work through.
Ghana's population would be increasing. It will not be decreasing, correct?
Sure, it will be increasing.
The problems that you say Akufo-Addo is, you know, bedeviled with in terms of governance will not have vanished. The problems that the president used to justify 126 have not left us. They have, if anything at all, worsened. And yet he's working with 86. So how do you continue this justification in the face of what the demand of the overwhelming people of Ghanaians is?
I think that, yes, I agree that the population of the people of Ghana will increase considering the impact and what His Excellency the President wants to achieve. Remember, Akufo-Addo is a leader on his own. Bawumia will be a leader on his own. He is saying that considering what I'll be taking over, remember, he's part of this particular administration. He knows the number of things that are being done to change the fortunes of the people of Ghana and the living standards. So he is saying that at the time that he will be taking over as president of the republic, the Ghanaian people give him the opportunity, he will need less a number of ministers to do so. And we have all, as Ghanaians, have provided a number of measures. If they are merged, it will be able to be done. And definitely, if he comes into office, it is not just that it is only the ministers that will be working. There are technocrats in several departments. All these departments that are established and the ministers are working. There will be different work schedules that will be given to people that will be working through to make sure that we have work efficiency and work effectiveness. So, as leaders on their own, they are also proffering solutions to this particular problem. And I don't think that it is a criticism. It is a divine intervention by way of a victim of a leader who thinks that this is the way I want to go about it. But as a leader in Akufo-Addo, he thinks that he wants to have this number of ministers. Samson, you are a lawyer. There has not been any cap in the number of ministers to be appointed. And that has been something that is also affecting the way and manner presidents come and they increase the number of ministers. Despite the fact that it is stated that majority of the ministers should come from parliament. But there is no any indication of any limitation. And that is sometimes one of the causes of which the numbers go up. We are very happy that now that leaders that are coming out to be elected as president are giving us specific numbers that can be measured against their leadership when they are given the opportunity. So I would well march on the leader, next leader that we are going to look out for. This will be solving the problems of the people of Ghana questioning the leadership currently. So I'm happy, and I know you are also happy, that considering the calling of the people of Ghana to limit the number or reduce the number, leadership has already taken those steps. And those steps are being mentioned, and people will judge them based on the numbers that they have given. And I think that the best thing that we're all looking at for is to get a person that will be able to represent us and be able to live up to his own work. And Dr. Bawumia will be able to live up to his own promise.
Okay, thank you. But to mention me and suggest that I'll be happy, it's going to be very difficult. I'll be happy if what the majority leader, through his own group that he has set up, committee that he has set up to lead to constitution review, if what he's seeking them to do is accomplished. And I know you have heard about the number of ministers that they are seeking, even though he wishes that you will not do more than 20. Yes, the NDC held a press conference and joined the many criticisms from governance bodies and CSOs about this reshuffle. We have been asking for a reshuffle for all this while, and eventually the president does it. And then we say, no value. Why do we do that?
Samson, good morning, and good morning to our viewers. It's painful listening to the attempt by my good brother, Haruna, to rationalize the irrationable or unrationable. I mean, you look at when the call, and the 466 days, I believe, is from when the members of parliament started asking for Ken to be taken out. The call for Ken to be taken out preceded even the members of parliament on the MPP side. So it's been longer than 466 days. The president clearly doesn't listen to Ghanaians, clearly doesn't understand what the pulse of the nation is, has lost a connection with the country, because if we were to take the information put out by Franklin Cudjoe for its value, it then supposes that the president has not done what Ghanaians wanted. Ghanaians wanted Ken Ofori-Atta out of government. He's actually been promoted and given more or less a supervisory role over the finance ministry. Because in his role to do negotiations and become basically the president's ambassador on financial matters, the finance minister works under him. Because the overarching desire of the president when it comes to the finances of our country will be run by that ambassador. So Ken has actually been promoted when we asked for him to be taken out of government. So clearly this shows you a president who is completely out of sync with the country. Again, it just shows you the dysfunction of this government and why December 7, 2024 must mark an end to this horrid chapter in our democratic journey by sending both Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo and Dr. Bawumia home. Just so that we can bring an end to the horror show that we've been subjected to for the past 7 years and 2 months. Why do I say so? President Akufo-Addo outdoored Dr. Bawumia against the will of many stalwarts of the NPP on the basis of one thing, his economic prowess, and the fact that this was someone he trusted to be able to effect and govern with him the changes that they promised Ghanaians. In fact, there are people in the NPP and many Democratic watchers who ascribe the 2016 victory of the NPP to Dr. Bawumia. In fact, the NPP as a political party has acknowledged that Dr. Bawumia's effect and role in governance, in policy issues, his lectures, his credibility, the way he was sold to Ghanaians, was a key factor why Ghanaians believed that Nanado should be given a chance, not because of Nanado, but because they believed that Nanado was going to benefit from what Dr. Bawumia brought to the table. Now, if Dr. Bawumia, in his great speech, dubbed the next chapter, says that, in his opinion, the way to govern this country and govern it effectively is with 50 ministers. First and foremost, it raises a credibility question on Dr. Bawumia because he's part of a government and we have not heard him speak. Well, I haven't. I don't know if you have, Samson, but I have not heard Dr. Bawumia speak openly to condemn the 126 or distance himself from the decision to have 126 ministers in the first term of their government. Or whether he did same with 86. I have absolutely no evidence that suggests that Dr. Bawumia even remotely suggested his discomfort at it. In fact, in the 86, you have people who have ascribed their appointments to Dr. Bawumia, relationship with Dr. Bawumia. And the word on the street is my very good friend and big brother, Amin Anta, has been made Minister for Finance because he's Bawumia's right-hand man who needs to work on a transition for them. So you realize that even among the 86, several persons, my brother Hassan Tampuli and all, I mean, because of their relationship, have been brought into ministerial portfolios. So he now telling us 50 will work the magic raises a question of even a credibility deficit on his part. But then even a bigger credibility deficit is the man who came to government or was voted for by Ghanaians because Ghanaians believed he would rely on Bawumia's advice. We are now being told by Haruna that Bawumia cannot insist, he can only assist. Fantastic punchline or sloganeering by the MVP. Haruna, you guys need to teach us how you come up with these catchy phrases. He can only assist and not insist. Well, we were told that he was coming to assist. It means that even in his assistant's role, Nanado no longer has trust for Bawumia's opinion. Nanado no longer takes Bawumia's opinion as credible enough to even give it a chance to implement. Nanado no longer trusts the ability and decision-making of Dr. Bawumia because, look, and in the past 3 weeks, Samson, we've seen enough evidence to tell the Ghanaian people that Dr. Bawumia is not a choice for Ghanaians. Why? Because even the sitting president, who brought him on because he trusted his ability, has realized that Dr. Bawumia's opinions no longer matter. E-levy. Dr. Bawumia, if we are being told, was opposed to it, the president went ahead with it. If we are to take what Dr. Bawumia said at his lecture, bet tax, the president ignored Dr. Bawumia. Emissions tax, the president ignored him. 15% on electricity, the president ignored him. And now we are even seeing that the president has ignored Dr. Bawumia's opinion on the size of government.
But the president, you said a while ago,
yes,
that some people have earned those positions because they are Dr. Bawumia's men.
Yes.
So how come a person who is not listening to is able to have people in ministerial positions?
That's why I raised the issue of credibility deficit, that what Dr. Bawumia says to us must not be taken at face value. We must take it that he is saying things to win power, but doesn't mean it. Because what it points to is that the 86 the president has the input of Dr. Bawumia, which means that when Dr. Bawumia tells you, if he really wanted the president to go with his 50, he could have nominated the people who are in government on his ticket and said, Mr. President, I'm withdrawing my nominees so that at least the number will drop. But that is where the credibility of Dr. Bawumia is called into question, that you can't really trust him. And Samson, the last point I want to make is that President Akufo-Addo has shown us with this reshuffle that he doesn't care. He's checked out of the country. And the MPP is clear. It's clear in the minds of the MPP. The president no longer, he's unconcerned about whatever the challenges of Ghana are. This reshuffle is not for the governance of our country. For the next 10 months, the president is telling us that, look, the country is going to be on autopilot. It is for the political survival of the NPP. His pick people who have lost elections, some of these are ministers who, and look, something, you understand this democratic process. When a minister is appointed to an office, even if you are a subject area expert, it takes you at least 6 months to settle in and understand the bureaucracy and get a grasp of it. At least, no matter how good you are, it takes you 6 months to get a grasp of it. Now, some of these ministers have done this. They came in at the beginning of 2021. They're now settling. They've now settled in and begun. They've gone to lose an election. They've lost their internal primaries. The president does a wholesale sweep of everybody who's lost the primaries, meaning those people have no political consequence to the MPP as a party. They can't bring any parliamentary seats to the table. And then what does he do? He brings in new people, many of whom are not subject area specialists, with the exception of maybe Dr. Okoboy, who is a doctor going into the health ministry. Show me all the other appointees. Maybe Amin Anta, who again is a finance person and has been at the ministry, you know, as a minister of state. The rest of them, none of them is a subject area expert. So first and foremost, you have people who are now going to, even if you use the 6 months, they have not been appointed into, they've not been approved yet. Parliament is now going to approve them. Even if we approve them before we rise at the end of March, take 6 months from that, that takes you to September. What are they going to do in that ministry, knowing that very well the campaign cycle is starting in August? So basically, the president is telling Ghanaians, as for your governance, I don't care about it. What I care about is getting people who are parliamentary candidates in my party into government. And this is why corruption begins to be an issue. Because the whole idea is to bring them into office, to give them an opportunity to be able to use the largesse of executive office to go and execute a partisan parliamentary ambition. The president's whole thinking is about the election. He's checked out when it comes to the governance of this country. And they kept Ken at office long enough to victimize the parliamentarians who went after him. And I can give you a list of them. Anyaso Utuom, Honorable Dr. Dixon, kicked out. Eves, Naughty. And these are people who called for Ken out and people who supported Alan when Alan was running in the race against Bawumia.
Eves, Naughty, the man who led the campaign
Eugene
has won. He's back.
No, do you know what he went through? Has he told you his struggles?
But he's won. That's the point.
He was the only one who managed to survive. But the lead spokesperson was a casualty. Eugene Subin. Eugene was kicked out. Everyone who led, with the exception of Asante Achim, Andiapia Kubi. With the exception of Andiapia Kubi, show me one of the lead spokespersons for Ken out and those who supported Alan, who survived. Every single one. So Ken was left there to go. Ken was involved. My ranking member.
Sylvester Tete.
My own cousin, yes.
Yes.
And as soon as Alan withdrew, he went on all fours begging Bawumia and became a Bawumia person. He joined, switched camp into the Bawumia campaign. And even with that one, go and ask him how he suffered.
Dr. Theo Champong, let's see the perspectives you bring here. But can we start on this note? Those who say that the president is bringing in people who are now getting the opportunity to become MPs and so on, and that it does not help because they are going to be busy in their constituencies, because we know that the campaign for 2024 has already started.
Yeah, very, very well so, and good morning. The campaign has started, and it begins to get into a crescendo starting July of this year, and then the latter part of the year, you even struggle to get a meeting with some of them. If you want to meet them, you have to go to the village and the constituency grounds to have such, you know, meetings. But I think there are two maybe fundamental premises that I also want to sort of start with. The first premise really being that, in my view, the government has squandered quite a lot of the goodwill that it had or has had. And number two, as Haruna was speaking, and this is a point I noted down earlier myself, that there were certain gaps in governance and certain gaps in the running of this country that a number of us and others had identified as far back as 2022. So something you recall, I was among the first on this same platform to actually call for Operator sack.
Right.
As far back July of 2022.
You called, you repeated, you got tired.
Right. I even got into a bit of trouble, you know, for that. Subsequent to that, there have been other calls from the likes of Kojum Pieni. I recall also July, August, same time of 2022. I recall Atachia himself earlier this year also spoke, asking him to resign. And even the party itself, the parliamentary caucus, did same, although nothing, you know, came out of that. So if you take these two premises and then you scrap another, for me, it comes down to the point that I think it is too little, too late, rightfully as you capture in the title, you know, and the graphic that you put out. I don't think that the timing helps the party particularly, and it wouldn't make much of a difference on the economic front and some of the social issues that we've been, you know, discussing ad nauseam here over the last few months. Number one, I think that the ministers and many of them being MPs and of course having been elected, in some of them, their constituencies themselves, they are not even sure whether they will win in the main election. So a lot of them are there or would be there as ministers, but with also one eye towards trying to keep or retain their parliamentary seats. So in that sense, you have a bit of a divided attention in terms of, you know, putting your full effort and commitment to the work at hand.
So your view is that from this angle, the national interest will not be served?
I think if you look at the national interest in terms of where we are, so basically the economy, inflation, bringing cost of goods and services down, sustaining the currency, some of the reforms that we've been talking about. I mean, if we've not been able to do it in the last 7 years, what will 10 months do? One. Number two, if the people that you're putting in there are also going to be fighting another cause, which for many of them is even more existential to their survival as politicians, right? Then it's even going to take some attention away from that sort of, you know, nationalist cause. I do concede that some of them already are ministers already, and so they are coming into the role with some sort of experience. But for many of them, they're going to take 3 to 6 months, as some is saying, to learn the ropes, right, of the job. Particularly for the finance ministry role, which is headed by my good friend, Dr. Amin, I think the immediate priority for him has to be how we conclude the external debt restructuring. So that's the biggest bottleneck currently to whether or not we unlock more IMF funding and also get more fiscal space that we need. So there's about $13 billion worth of Eurobonds that we need to restructure. The official creditor committee on the bilateral debt side, you know, needs to give more or less their blessing, right, to any deal that we agree with the commercial creditors. And originally the government says, or had indicated that they are looking to conclude this external commercial debt restructuring by March of this year. And I think that really sets the time for Dr. Amin and his team to start working on this ASCP. It's going to be difficult, but it's not insurmountable. And I related to that, I would again advocate that if it's probably not already started, he should start getting on the flight and heading towards, you know, China and some of those other players to see what we can get.
You don't appreciate that Ken Oforiatta's new position is for that purpose, for continuity?
He's been there for the last 7 years. Not much, in my view, has come out of that, particularly in the last few months. And I think related to that point, I actually had written it down. We need better clarity on what exactly Ken is going to be doing at the finance ministry. So they say he's going to be an advisor, and you quoted Franklin and others in terms of negotiating big deals, and he might be bigger than even, I'm not too sure what exactly that would entail, but I think we need some specific clarity. What is he going to be doing different from what Amin and the folks at the finance ministry, again, would be doing? Because you might have some duplication of potential role in there. But as a substantive finance minister, I would think that, you know, Amin and his team should be engaging the different creditor groups, especially, you know, China, in the next few weeks. And hopefully we can conclude this by March or by April, you know, of this year. Related to that point is also the fact that if you look at the budget itself, many of the items in the budget are already being implemented. So as finance minister, it's a bit difficult to actually see how much scope or room he can actually influence the decision-making process in the next few months. The only avenue for him to do something would be when it comes to the mid-year budget in June or July this year. But again, that may be too little, too late, in my view. So those are the issues for me and how, you know, I look at that. The last point maybe just to add is also, of course, on the political side of things. If you look at a number of the people that have been appointed, it does indicate to me that many of them are in the Bawumia sort of call it camp, right? And they likely would become members of the cabinet or the government should they win the December 2024, you know, election. So in a sense, it's putting the Akufo-Addo and his government on one side and giving some sort of room potentially for these new candidates who would be members in the cabinet to come. Again, should they win the election? And the election is going to be highly competitive.
A quick one on this. Chairman Sebonsu is said to be very instrumental and significant in the Bawumia camp, correct?
To an extent, yes.
Right. Now, he, as Minister of Parliamentary Affairs, set up a Constitution Review Committee. Yep. That committee's recommendation is that we should cap our ministers to 25. Maximum 25. Political, you know, intellectuals like Dr. Asa Asante say that we can do with 19 ministers. Alan Shermanting says he will do with 40 ministers. Bawumia says I'll do with 50. Then Mahama says I'll do with 60. From where you sit, at the time where there was a clarion call for the reshuffle, the major plank was for a downsizing, as you were championing.
Absolutely.
Do you think at this point, from what has happened, that the president is listening at all?
I don't think so. And it's not even just the reshuffle. You can go back, to some of the major policy decisions that have been made and calls for some things to be scrapped, you know, that it had to take extra effort, right? So, for example, this 15% VAT on electricity, it had to take extra effort to the point of labor unions and other groups threatening to go on the street before, right, the government of the day does, you know, the listening. Mm-hmm. And you can cite numerous other examples related to that. Governance is not easy, but at the end of the day, you want to make life bearable for the citizens. And to that extent, you want to show that you are with the people and working for the people. And if you look at, you know, some of the issues that have taken place last several months and years, it doesn't indicate to me that the government necessarily has been carrying the people along, you know, on this journey. So when Haruna then makes the point or uses the football analogy to say, well, you can make substitutions very late in the game and people will come and have an impact, you know, on the game and even win you games, it doesn't work like that when it comes to governance and even running an economy. It takes a while for reforms to begin to filter through.
You are strong on the economy side. Very briefly, so I go to Kwaku Kwarteng. You are strong on the economy side. The 2024 targets have already been set in the budget, correct? As you may have already, you know, pointed to. So is there anything different these appointees are coming in to do that we should be so, you know, alarmed and talk about the fact that this is too little, too late? As it may be said, that they may come in with some initiative and some, you know, creative skills to implement the budget.
No, the budget is already in motion. I've said that. So you don't expect them to come and change things, right, overnight. There may be one or two small quick wins. Like, for example, if we're able to push through and conclude on this external commercial debt restructuring, because that's the major overhang the next few months that we've got to deal with. But if you also look at it politically in terms of a new crop of people potentially coming in that could form, you know, part of the government should they win an election, then in a sense, it does indicate, you know, some sort of opportunity to learn or training ground. Because in any way, or in any case, we've said that from July, August, many of them will be back on the campaign trail. And if you want to meet them, you have to go to the villages, towns, and constituencies.
All right. Kwaku Kwarteng, thank you very much for joining us. She chairs the Finance Committee in Parliament, MP for Obuasi. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Right.
Good morning,
right.
US.
So my first question will be, how come you are supporting this when, as we understand, you declined to be part of it?
Well, thank you, Samson. To start with, I think it's important to state that ordinarily, if the president invited anybody and mentioned his intention to nominate them for a ministerial appointment, this is not a matter that should be in the media. but on this occasion, unfortunately, somehow there were media reports, and I was disturbed by the reasons being suggested for me declining to take up the ministerial appointment. And therefore, it became necessary to issue the statement to clarify that the reasons were inaccurate and that it was for these legitimate reasons that I declined to take up the ministerial position. But
So first start off, for those of us who have not read your statement, help them and appreciate that you just don't want to be part of a bad, you know, economic management team. And that there are other reasons why you declined. Explain to them why you declined.
Well, I think given the challenges that this administration has faced, and given the historical, in my view, historical weaknesses in the way we have managed our economy, not necessarily this Nanado administration, this government has done what it can. I'm very clear in my mind about that, and therefore I should be proud to support such a government, especially in these difficult times. And therefore, the suggestion that somehow I considered that this was a team that I do not want to be I do not want to play in is completely wrong. And I suggest to people to disregard that. The reason I declined is this. First, they come in twofold. The first is that, you know, Parliament plays a critical role in the work of government. It was not for nothing that in 2021, when the NPP side in Parliament became depleted of all the people who had competence in finance and economy, the president, the majority leader, and the then finance minister all spoke with me and suggested that I leave the executive to go and support the work of government in Parliament. And over the period, I have done a lot. I'm proud of some of the things that we have been able to achieve because I'm in Parliament. And therefore, I have no regrets for being moved from the ministry to Parliament. And I considered that it is work that I must complete in Parliament, at least to the end of this Parliament's life. Mm-hmm. And therefore, being moved to the executive at this time would be suboptimal. And that is why it was the first reason I declined.
In Parliament, you literally don't have the power of the purse as an individual to be able to effect some of the changes that you would want to, but as a minister, you then have the opportunity to determine certain directions in the implementation of the government's agenda. So this is a lost opportunity. You could do better.
Not necessarily, Samson. Look, especially for this particular finance committee, remember that we are 25, 12 of us, 12 from the minority side, 12 from the majority side, and I chair. So my vote is extremely important for this particular finance committee. The second is that sometimes it's
Yeah, so you do both. Most of you are doing both, isn't it? You do both. You are a minister, you are in Parliament anyway.
Well, if you're a minister, you are unable to serve as the chairman for a committee.
Okay.
So the point I'm making is that I am playing a role that I consider to be in the national interest. I'm playing a critical role in Parliament. And sometimes it is not just your vote. It's also your ability to understand this finance issue and to convince your colleagues why one referral will have to be approved as it is, or that we should prevail on the minister to change certain things in the referral. So the long and short, the point I'm making is that there is a critical role I'm playing, and I didn't consider that being moved to the executive was optimal at this point. But the second point, and perhaps the more important point, is that, you know, the external global environment has, in my view, imposed new challenges on us as a people, in respect especially of the economy. Mm. Now, that together with the fact that, in my view, there's a deficit of confidence within the population towards Ghanaians. I hear too many Ghanaians expressing concerns that the political class is no longer working for them, and that we are out for ourselves. I am one of those who believe that these are matters that the NPP going forward, especially formulating our manifesto, must respond to frontally. The deficit in political confidence in the political class, but also the new challenges imposed by a hostile economic global environment are all things that should call for new ways of doing things. These are discussions I would be happy to participate in as MPP formulate strategies going forward. I consider that I'm in a better position to do that as a non-ministerial member of parliament than to be a minister and to try and do this. So, in short, for these two reasons,
right?
I suggest
let me get your brief view on this, because you came to the fore in Kufuor's regime. What Kufuor did, President Akufo-Addo, is doing completely the opposite. In his final year, he asked all appointees seeking elections or re-election to leave his government, and he replaced them with people who could work without the distraction of campaigns. Nana Addo has done the opposite. And we have just been told that you need at least about 6 months to settle in. We understand, as it were, these appointments will be confirmed by Parliament, maybe hopefully by close of March before the Parliament rises. What time is there to do what work when these people are supposed to, you know, get onto the field of campaign?
Samson, I consider that there are pros and cons for each of the scenarios that you paint. Look, it is also the case that when an individual has no stake, really, in, say, the next political phase after the election, then their attitude to governance may well be, how do I look after myself? Because I'm exiting. I need to get my pensions. That is one way you could look at it. But it's also a legitimate point to say that, to make that, well, you're on your way out, and because you're not contesting elections, you have a lot more time. You would bring that to the benefit of the work you do. Mm. You could look at it either way.
All right.
I think you should leave it to the president. If on this occasion the president considers that those who have a stake going forward should lead the project, not just of the election, but also concluding this last year of this administration, I think we should allow the president to have his way.
Thank you very much. Kweku Kwarteng is MP for Bwasi West, and he chairs the Finance Committee in Parliament. We have Sammy Obing, who is the Parliamentary Network Africa leader. He says that Kweku Kwarteng has been extremely useful at the Finance Committee. Many insiders in Parliament who know what I know, working as head of a parliamentary monetary organization, will tell you that, but for Kweku Kwarteng and his Finance Committee, a lot of things would have gone wrong through the Parliament route. Tax exemptions have been blocked. Finance agreements that may not benefit the country have been called out, sometimes making the executive angry. We need a strong legislature, just as we need an effective, efficient executive. And that is what to do. When we see people doing right, we should be bold to, you know, publicly approve them. Sammy Obing, thank you very much for sending that one in. There's a little debate about whether those who have been reassigned will have to be, as it were, vetted again. Let me take just a minute or so from Sam George, and then we can close the chapter on this discussion. Maybe Haruna too can share just, you know, a minute of his view on that, and then we can end it there. What do you say, Roxen Nelson Dafiamapo, your man on the constitutional legal team?
Well, fantastic point Roxen makes, and I mean, it reiterates the point that I made, that the president has checked out. You're seeing so many little gaffes in communication coming out of the presidency. It tells you that that house is a house in disorder, because the president in that statement is clear that this list, and I think Schedule A, have had their appointments revoked. It's stated explicitly there.
That's right.
Now, once you say an appointment has been revoked, by function of the J.H. Mensah case, the revocation of an appointment means that that person can no longer hold themselves out as an as a minister of state. And in fact, the president doesn't just say it's been revoked. He said it's been revoked with immediate effect. So it then supposes that when he now goes to the next page.
So this is the language.
Yeah.
And the communication issued from the Communication Directorate of the Jubilee House.
Yes.
On the 14th of February.
Yes.
It says, President Akufo-Addo makes changes to the executive. A, this is the first group, exit from office. The President of the Republic, Nanado Dankwa Akufo-Addo, has relieved the following ministers and deputy ministers of their portfolios in government with immediate effect. And that's where you find the Finance Minister, Ambrose Dairy, you find the Health Minister and others, Kojo Opon, Nkrumah Communication,
yeah.
Asenso Bwachi also reassigned, yes, you find him there,
yeah.
And so on. You say, once this is where the problem is.
Once you say you've relieved them from office with immediate effect, it means you have revoked the appointment. And that is the function of the J.H. Mensah case.
Mm.
Because don't forget, when in that instance, the then majority leader said to them that, oh, this was a miscommunication. J.H. Mensah's argument was that in constitutional matters, there's nothing like miscommunication. And so once the president has relieved those ministers, they cannot hold themselves out as ministers in a reassigned position. The president has the power to reassign them.
Mm.
Don't get us wrong. But in reassigning them, they are now considered fresh appointees who would then have to appear before parliament for its approval. Because the president's appointment must be approved by parliament.
Your point is that if there had not been a communication or a release like this, saying they have been relieved of their posts with immediate effect, then there would not have been a problem.
All we are saying
is, if he simply said, I am reassigning Muhammad Amin Anta, I'm reassigning Henry Korte, Francis Asensu Bwachi, Kojo Opon Nkrumah, yes, and then Abdoulaye Abanga.
Yes.
So that would have been okay.
In fact, he could have still maintained this letter, but in Schedule A, the ministers he's reassigning would not have been part of that list. So there are ministers who have been altogether taken out, like Lariba.
Terminated.
Mm. He's not reassigned. So that schedule should have had only those ministers,
mm,
because those are the ministers he's relieving of posts,
right,
with immediate effect.
Mm.
Then, because if you go further, he then has another schedule where he says, I am reassigning. So including those you want to reassign in the original
list of those who are going for good.
It is a big gaffe, which, based on the ruling from the Supreme Court, we have no other option than to say that these are new appointments.
Is this argument not one of form over substance?
Well, our hands are tied as parliament, given the action of the NPP in 1996.
In you that understand? Case, there was a difference. A government's tenure had terminated.
Yes.
And then a new government comes,
yes,
in. And Jerry Rawlings says, I want these people to stay. That was the issue.
Yes.
And in fact, the court in that decision suggested that what it meant was that the appointment committee or the vetting was that, or the prior approval requirement, mm, was for the parliament that
gave
is
that
in effect. The parliament that was effective had been dissolved and was gone. So if you have a new government, a new regime with a newly sworn in parliament, they must give the prior approval. You don't have that situation here.
Something. The reason why the president's thing is not even just the Supreme Court ruling, which we have established, but it's the constitutional mandate that the president's appointments must be approved by parliament. Even when he's doing a reassignment, parliament is within his right to say that this minister was suitable and approved for this portfolio. But in our vetting of him for this new portfolio, we do not find him fit for office.
You are setting a new rule that any time a minister is being reassigned, they must come back to parliament for vetting.
In this manner, when they've been relieved of their original portfolio by the president.
Because the communication to the public, not the communication to parliament, is the issue.
No, this communication that came to the public is the same thing that came to parliament.
There's no difference?
No. What came to parliament stated that they've been relieved what the speaker read is that they've been relieved of their portfolio. And like I said, the problem shows you a house in disorder. Because again, like, and this just establishes the issue we're raising about ministers who are parliamentary candidates now having to go into ministries. The head of communications is a parliamentary candidate. So he's got one head, one leg in the Flagstaff House doing communications for the president. He's got another leg running, looking at his parliamentary candidate. And you are seeing these gaps. You know, there was another issue even with the DCs,
okay,
where they quoted the wrong legislation. They quoted a Kenyan legislation
all right
instead of a Ghanaian legislation.
Thank you very much.
I mean, so it shows you that this has to go to court.
The DHMNSA matter that I'm referring to has been digested in Dr. Samuel Kofi Dateba, former Justice of the Supreme Court, his book entitled Reflections on the Supreme Court of Ghana. And I just read just a small portion here. He says, on the main substantive issue, the Supreme Court held that retained ministers and deputy ministers required the prior approval of Parliament before they could act or hold themselves out as ministers or deputy ministers of state. Justice Aikins explained the court's decision in this manner. Quote, the argument of the Attorney General that the requirement of prior approval does not apply to hold over ministers, and that the phrase does not mean the consideration and vetting of such ministers is untenable. It is unambiguously clear that the appointment of ministers and deputy ministers of state by the president under Article 78, Clause 1 and 79, Clause 1 of the Constitution 1992 shall be with the prior approval of Parliament, and the Parliament here should mean the current parliament and not the previous parliament. If the framers of the Constitution 1992 had intended to refer to the erstwhile parliament, they would have stated so. It stands to reason that when a new parliament and a new president are sworn in, all such ministers intended to assist the president in his deliberations must be appointed in accordance with the provisions of Article 78 and 79(1), clause 1, clause 1, each of those, before they assume office as such. If the presidential candidate for the New Patriotic Party or the People's Convention Party had won the elections, it would be absurd to suggest that the ministers and deputy ministers of the previous regime would have been retained to avoid creating a power vacuum. So, reading this, it will suggest that this argument is one that should not be made. It's one of form over substance. Haruna, I said you give us a minute of your view on this, and then we take a break.
Thank you, Samson. I really appreciate this very intellectual argument that we are putting forward. I have always said that when you get an opportunity to appear or speak on news files, you must be able to make sure that you create an impact on the minds of the people. I do agree with the point that some suggestions and some criticisms have been made with regard to the way and manner that the letter was written. Samson, we all know that with the good intent of His Excellency the President, it's very clear that he is relieving them of their portfolio, but not as ministers of state. And I am happy that you have quoted portions of a judgment that has been adduced or produced by a competent court of jurisdiction, and these particular points ought not to be in stand for us to be able to debate them. Samson, in our discussion, we talked about Dr. Bawumia's lack of trust and credibility when it comes to the effectiveness of the work. And my brother,
oh, I ask you a very specific question for just a minute's intervention so that we will end this discussion here, sir.
Samson, I wanted to have made some good points on that particular matter because I had stayed on to listen, and I just wanted to make an inference to a particular point to indicate that Dr. Bawumia's importance to the presidency of Akufo-Addo has not been looked down upon. If you look at its impact in terms of how he renegotiated the interoperability from $1.2 billion to $4.something million, in terms of his impact and then his contribution to digitalization and the drone system and the ambulance system. This has been something that, as Vice President, he has been able to offer solutions to upcoming issues that affect the people of Ghana. And I think that it is something all of us will look at. Something, you talk about subject area, and this is in line with the ministers that have just been appointed. If you look at the greatest impact we have in education, it was done by NAPO, who has been a medical person of all of us know. If you look at the impact of Osafu Mafu, he was an engineer by profession, that he had a very great impact in terms of finance in this country. So as for subject area, it is very important. And constitutionally, this has not been clearly defined, whether you must be a subject area person in terms of where you have been appointed to. But in terms of delivery, there are excess in subject areas in the ministry that you are going, and their contribution to your vision and the vision of the president would be able to make an impact in the governance system in Ghana.
All right. Thank you very much for your contribution on this chapter of the discussion. And we'll take a break here. And yes, somebody just said, is it a view I'm expressing? I just read what the G.H. Mensah case said. And it does appear clearly that what the minority is seeking to push is form over substance. That's all I said. Because of the effectiveness of the parliament that needs to make the approval. This parliament is the one that has already approved these other people. And so that's just what it is.
Let
me close a chapter with a paragraph from this book also on the doctrine of justiciability. And it says that for a case to be justiciable, the court must not be offering an advisory opinion in it. The plaintiff must have capacity and the issues must be ripe, but neither moot nor in violation of the political question doctrine. In this book, by the portion I've also read, this is Dispensing Justice in a Society in Flux, Walking a legal tightrope. Dispensing Justice in a Society in Flux, Walking a Legal Tightrope. Justice Kwesi Nkrumah Aduamma wrote this. Actually, it's just about to be launched on the 22nd. So it does appear that it's clearly a question of, form over substance. Yeah. We'll take a break here.